Welcome to the Writer's Well podcast, conversations about writing from craft to wellness with Rachel Herron and Jay Thorne.
Hey.
Hello, Jay. Let's talk about wellness for a minute.
How are you? Tell everyone how you're doing.
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. I have a theory. Oh my God, it's going to work. Sorry. I have a theory that I have coronavirus. And like 100% of my right creative brain tells me I have coronavirus because for 4 days I've had the fever and the cough and the unshakable fatigue that I've never slept like this in my entire life. But the other 100% of my left brain goes, it's the media.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even watch news, but I don't watch news. I don't look at the news online, and I'm still getting so much of it somehow that I could completely accept that this is 100% psychosomatic. Although I'm not a hypochondriac, I'm an underreactor rather than.
Yeah, you mentioned that last time, but that whole media thing, I'll tell you.
How does it get to us? I don't look at it.
It is. It's not their fault that we have the coronavirus, but I'm so sick of the bullshit panic that they've been dealing. Yeah. And I'll tell you, like, I think that's made it worse. I think it's made everything worse, just as far as anxiety, immune systems, and
totally.
I don't blame anyone, including our buffoon in the White House, for underestimating what the situation is, because the media just blows everything out of proportion. And so how do you tell what to be concerned about and what is clickbait and headline grabbing? Like, it's almost impossible.
Yeah. The only thing I look at is Instagram, and I get so much on there that I've basically given up Instagram too. But I do have to say about the whole staying in, you know, the social isolation that we are doing. And I think that we are doing it for a reason. We've seen what's happened in Italy and how death rates have, you know, skyrocketed from this. It's not a joke. Older people are dying. So we're doing it for a good reason, staying in for a good reason. Lowering social contact, and Lala's having a hard time with it. She's like, oh, it's so hard to work at home and not leave the house. And she's the one who's, you know, going out to get groceries and that kind of thing. But, cause she feels fine, and she's obviously taking all precautions, but me, I don't mind. I do not mind yet. I know it's only been 5 or 6 days, but I'm like, what? I have to stay in the house and read a book when I'm not working. This is fantastic. Like, all my plans are canceled. Great. Yeah. I want to go out and socialize with people. I do it because it is good for me. And I know I love it when I'm doing it, and I love my friends. But we have a cartoon that's been on our fridge for years. And it's this woman flopped back in a chair. It's a New Yorker cartoon. And under it, it says, high on the fumes of canceled plans. Yeah. I feel like I'm really high on those fumes. How about you?
Yeah. The additional challenge I have that a lot of people have is I'm dealing with two teenagers, you know,
oh my God,
and like if my kids were little and didn't know any better, it's not even an issue, but like teenage, you know, and they swing, like, you know, they've said, well, have you been through anything like this before? And I'm like, no, you know, but on the other hand, their kids these days are pretty smart, and like, and they're like, well, you know, it's really not affecting young people and mostly healthy people. I'm like, true, but like, those are the people who, if you go and visit the grandparents or visit the older friends, you could be asymptomatic and give it to them. So this is one of those situations where, yeah, you know, to you, it doesn't make any sense, or it seems silly, or it seems overreactive, but like, this is one of those rare times where we can see a direct connection between individual actions and communal results,
which is really interesting to see in today's world, because we never see that,
right?
And we do have a certain element of power that people are practicing. I saw a great meme on Instagram, of course, that said, like, your grandparents went to war, you're complaining about having to stay home. You're right, I gotta stay home and watch Netflix. That was terrible. I did also see something really, really that moved me and just made my heart break, is that an Italian guide showed the paper in February, and he showed the page on which the I want to call them epilogues, what's the word when somebody dies, obituary.
Well, it's sort of an epilogue.
Oh, that's terrible. Yes,
that works.
My brain is a little bit tired. So he showed it from February, and it was one page. And then he like, you know, pointed to it in the pictures and stuff like that. And then he showed it from this week and he just kept turning pages. And it was 10 full pages. That's the change that had happened in this little town in Italy, full of older people, you know? So yeah, like we, like you say, we are making change. So are your kids getting it? Are they understanding
it? Yeah. I mean, they're, you know, kids are pretty resilient too. That's the other thing. They're not, they're not fragile the way we think they are. And so they're, you know, they're fine. And, now, one of the things that I suggested to them, I'll throw it out there for listeners, like is a way to sort of cut through the bullshit and dispel of the fear mongering is I'm listening to two podcasts in particular that are bringing epidemiologists, scientists, doctors on to talk about it rationally. Peter Attia's podcast, he's friends with Tim Ferriss. It's called The Drive. They're doing updates every few days. And James Altucher is having doctors and scientists on as well. And those conversations tend to be a little more, you know, rational.
He had an epidemiologist on his and then on Altucher. And then he also like broke it down financially, what it's going to look like or what it might look like. Yeah. And for Altucher, I really appreciate it because he always writes about all of his podcasts. And when I can't quite bear to put an epidemiologist in my already panicking head, I was able to read the podcast and it was really reassuring.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, again, I'm not saying this isn't real or we shouldn't be concerned, but a lot of times I'm hearing like, well, it's better if we overreact. And I'm like, no, it's not always better because there are these casualties of war.
Yeah.
You know, these people who are collateral damage and we don't know how far that ripple is going to go. So like, yes, we absolutely must shut down gatherings. We absolutely must take precautions, but like those are going to have consequences. People are going to lose jobs. Businesses are going to fold. Lives are going to be ended. People are going to lose their houses. Like it's not so simple just to say like, well, you're not taking it seriously enough. You just need to stay home and stop. Like there's a whole another part of life that's got to go on.
Exactly. That's a real place of privilege. And when we are able to do that, we have to know that. From a very place of privilege, I did cancel my Barcelona trip, obviously.
Yeah. There's
nothing I could do about that. And I feel terrible about it. But the people who were going seem to be grateful that I tried for so long to keep saying that we were going.
Yeah.
It was the very last minute that we canceled.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now that we've brought everybody down, let's talk. Oh gosh, now I'm like rethinking my question for you. No, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun thing. Yes, but business wise, Patreon, no new patrons. But if you'd like to look at what we have and what you can help us with, you can always go to patreon.com/thewriterswell. And we want to thank everybody who is patroning with us right now. It really, really means the difference to us.
Yes.
Very, very wonderful when that money comes in every month.
Yeah, we do appreciate that. Yeah, thank you. As far as comments go, last week's episode number 166 was which writer do you most want to be? And some fabulous responses we got here. So we'll start in chronological order as we always do. Our buddy Christopher talks about Hemingway. I mean, I know Hemingway is an old white guy and he's probably not in vogue now, but he was a hell of a writer.
Yep.
So I love that. Yeah.
And also his point was to copy the style of the writer. Love, which is a time-honored tradition of learning how to write.
Yes.
Could not recommend it more. Yeah.
There are some authors I've heard, Neil Gaiman might be one of these, who recommend typing out your favorite book, like word for word.
Yes. Yes,
not as a means to copy it, just to sort of get that
feel. It.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever done it? I've never done it.
No, I don't know if I have the stamina to do that. Like,
I think I'd get a little bored.
Yeah, I don't think I could. I mean, maybe a chapter or two, but I don't know if I could do a whole book.
Yeah, no, thank you. I've got enough.
Yeah, that, the act of typing is not one of my favorite things to do either. So
yeah, me too.
Jenny chimed in there. Oh no, wait, who is next? Oh no, I'm sorry. It was Amy, Marcel Proust. That was great. Talking about dipping a cookie into tea.
he's intense. I tried once and only got a few hundred pages in, and I was like on a challenge with friends and we still couldn't read it.
Yeah. That's definitely a challenge. Yep. S.A. Schneider chimed in. He went with an obvious one, Stephen King, but also talked about Wise and Hickman from Dragonlance Chronicles. I don't know those books, but I trust S.A. Schneider has great taste, so we'll go with that.
And he said, also, do we get bonus points if we say Jay Thorne?
Yeah, and I said no.
Said no, and I said yes. Yes, we do.
Kim said Sharon K. Penman. She also stole your pick of Leanne Moriarty. So that was great. Kate Colby, Neil Gaiman. Yep, that's definitely a great choice. Sarah Black, let's see, she went more classic literature, I think. She said Raymond Chandler, Jane Austen.
And she writes Haruki Murakami.
Really does.
Yeah. And I've seen a tiny little bit from her, and I've worked with her a lot. And when I think of Murakami now, I think of Sarah. And really? I love that she has that as a focal point. I love Murakami's work. Nice. So to know that, yeah.
Yeah. Edwin decided to take it sideways. So yeah, Edwin, you take it whatever direction you want to go. He said the author he credits with most fixing his love for science fiction is Andre Norton. So that was a pretty cool shout out there.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We had Anne Marie also talked about Leanne Moriarty. So that was pretty cool. Robin McKinley was someone else that she mentioned.
Yeah, I like her.
Yep. Let's see here. Lisa Young. She just discovered David Kep, Cold Storage. I'm not familiar with him.
I'm not either.
No, and she also said Lindsay Broker. So, yep.
Well, I've actually never read her fantasy, and I keep meaning to. So if anybody wants to point me to a great place to start with Lindsay Broker's fantasy, it's overwhelming when you look at her catalog because it's so huge. So somebody tell me where to start in fantasy, not sci-fi, but fantasy.
Yes, for sure. Jasmine said Mary Robinette Kowal for Alternate History. And Sim Kern for short stories.
I was once at a conference and Mary Robinette gave me a tiny little tiara. I still have it somewhere. It's nice. My writing tiara. I know. I fangirl over her. Nice. So.
So yeah, thank you to everyone who left comments. We appreciate it. It's always fun, and hopefully comments stay where they are and they keep coming back. So far, so good.
Yay. Yeah. Thank you for those. Thank you, everyone. Okay. Well, I have a question now, which is basically me just wanting to tell stories on air, like have you tell me stories.
Okay.
And this should have come around Halloween, and it didn't. And, but it's kind of playing into a little bit of what I'm working on right now in my novel. So you can take this wherever you want. How do your feelings about the supernatural affect your writing?
Oh, what a juicy question.
You didn't see that coming. Basically, no. I'm giving you permission to tell me all your ghost stories and try to connect it to writing if you can. But otherwise, you have any, you could be like a hard-boiled.
Yeah, I don't I don't have like a haunted house story. I don't have an alien abduction story.
Dang it!
But I do have a story that is related to writing. And some people might think this is bullshit. I'm not making it up. I'll tell
it. I love stories that people might think are bullshit. I'm going to believe you.
Okay.
I'll let you know if I do, but I'm pretty sure I will.
All right. So I guess it was late 2000s. It was right around the time I was starting to write, get into KDP Select, and was just dabbling. My grandparents died. They died about 9 months apart. They were elderly, like, you know, it was what happens. And and my grandfather was a World War II veteran, and he was one of those of the greatest generation who never talked about it, like, he to anybody, you know, those guys and gals really just kind of came back and readjusted to civilian life and didn't really tell those stories. And he was, they were Catholic, like they weren't like, you know, he wasn't some sort of alternate spirituality or anything like that. And we were living in Ohio at the time, so not even in, like, they were in Pittsburgh. And a month or so after my grandfather died, I started waking up. And I would wake up, and our kids were little, so we would leave our bedroom door open. And I would wake up, and I could swear I could sense, not see, but I could sense someone in the room, but it didn't scare me. Like I didn't feel like there was an intruder. I just felt a presence, and I wasn't scared, but it was definitely unsettling. And this went on for like weeks, and I would just wake up and I would look, and I could, there was something fuzzy. I couldn't really see anything. And then I would like roll over and go back to sleep and I'd be fine. And this kept happening over and over again. And around the same time, I was reading a lot of, I'm a history nerd, so I read a lot of, you know, history for fun, which most people would consider homework or punishment. And
yeah, I
was reading about the Gaki or the Preta. So it's G-A-K-I. It's from Japanese mythology. And the Gaki or the Preta is also known as the Hungry Ghost. Mm. And the Hungry Ghost mythology is that there are these spirits that walk the earth, and for some reason they passed away with something unresolved. And the Hungry Ghost is often a metaphor for addiction, because the Hungry Ghost cannot satiate. Like they eat and they eat and they eat and they're never satisfied. They're portrayed in a lot of Japanese folklore as like big heads and like bulging stomachs and almost like skeletal, like Gollum. Gollum would be from Lord of the Rings would be a perfect example of a Gaki, like never satisfied, always wanting something. And so I started writing, and I ended up writing a trilogy that I unpublished, and it featured this Gaki or this Preta. And here's where, like, the people can think I'm full of shit. I don't know, but once I started writing that, drafting that, those nightly visitations went away.
What?
They never came back. And like I finished drafting the book. I revised it. I had it edited. I published it. I since unpublished it because it was one of my earliest writings. And like, I think the core concept of the story is pretty cool. And it would be something like way in the future, if I ever decide to pull out something old and rewrite it, that would be it. But so here's where I'm connecting it to writing. I don't know if this is legit or not, but I wonder if there was something involving my grandfather. He served in the Pacific. I forgot to mention that. My grandfather, Japan, World War II, something unfinished, unsaid, unsettled. I don't know.
I would buy that for a dollar. I lived on Saipan, which was one of the hottest battlefields in the Pacific in World War II. And there's so much GI plus Japanese soldier lore there that I kind of grew up with knowing that part of the battles really, really intimately. So I'm into this idea of yours. Also, I want to ask, at what point in your career really was this? This was very early in your career?
Very early. Yeah.
So I wonder if there's also something to the fact that you were doing what you were meant to do.
Yeah. Like I could have interpreted it a number of different ways. Like maybe it didn't have anything to do with him. Maybe that was his way of nudging me towards something.
Right.
You know, I really don't know, but like, I'm not like, even though I write horror and dark fantasy and supernatural stuff, like I don't go one way or the other. Like I'm not a hardcore believer in ghosts, but I'm not totally skeptical either. But this is the one thing in my life that I can say definitively, like there was something happening. And it might have all just been in my head. Maybe it was just a sleep state, and you know that I was sort of lucid dreaming. Who knows? Like that could be it too. But like that's something where like there was I did something that had a direct result on whatever I was feeling. So
that is so cool. That's a really good story. That's way better than anything I have.
I thought you had like one like cocked in the chamber, and you're like ready to like, I can't wait to tell you this.
I have a bunch of little ones. And the reason I ask it is because it actually is coming down to me thinking about, you know, changing genres again. I think I've mentioned to you that I have thought about writing horror in the past, and I've been reading a lot more horror lately because all of the books I write, they all tend to try to bring in an element of supernatural, and I want to write it. Sometimes
Is it supernatural or darkness? Because I think there's a different, what do you think you're trying to bring in?
Supernatural, like something that is beyond the veil that the person on the page doesn't understand. And in fact, my first five books, I realized, this is actually my story. My first five books were supernatural in a way, although they were very, very agnostic, and someone who doesn't read supernatural stories would read them and not know that. They were romances, but there's this dead woman, Eliza Carpenter, who is basically orchestrating all of the matches. for this. And she kind of came out really, really naturally, this person behind the scene, putting people together because she believed in love. That was her biggest thing before she died. And now she's doing it. So I realized that that's always been there. And in the book I'm writing right now, I want something to help her, and I can't change it. It is a thriller that I've sold, right? It's not going to have supernatural elements, okay. But the supernatural elements keep wanting to come in. And that was just making me think of, what do I feel about the supernatural? What stories do I have? And I love that story about your grandfather. And I just have one about my mom. My mom and I and my family went to New Zealand one time when we were all adults. And it was the first time she'd ever been to her mother's grave since her mom had died like probably 20 years before. She hadn't been back to the grave. And I took a picture of her. No, wait. Was my, no, I can't remember who took a picture. It was either me or Christy. I think I might be in the picture. Took a picture of her placing like a little pine cone on top of her brother's grave. And right at that moment, the sun broke through and bathed her head in light, which we thought was amazing when we saw the picture, when it came back, because there was nothing else like that on any of the other pictures. But also you can basically see a figure bowing in the forefront of the camera that is not on any of the other pictures. It's so beautiful. And something like that wanted to slip into my work this week. And I went and looked up the photo, and it's such a stunning photo that it was back in the days of cameras, right? Yeah. So when we shared the photo around, we all cried. Like, just when we saw it, we cried. What is going on? You can't explain what is going on in this picture. Wow. So you can actually like almost see through the figure that is bowing. And I'll send you the image, and you can put it in the show notes if you want. It's really beautiful. But other than that, I've only had really stupid supernatural things happen. Like one time I was at the fire station and I was working with a coworker. We were at a big conference table. This is so stupid. This is why I want to hear what other people say. There was the large binder clip, the biggest one that they have, was sitting in between us. Both of us were working on our paperwork. We're doing something, I don't remember what. And the binder clip flew 6 inches sideways and stopped as if it braked.
Whoa.
And Steve across from me, like, right, you know, 2 feet from me, this is right between us, 2 feet from me, Steve is Mormon. And he just went even wider than he already was. And he backed up from the table, and I backed up from the table. And I think if he hadn't been there, we both would have thought it was some strange fluke or whatever. We examined the table. There was nobody else around. There was nothing to make it do that. So I've had a haunted binder clip, nice. Which is really good for a writer, haunted stationery. And one time my sister and I both saw this chair in our room in Rome, this really, really old pensione in Rome. It just jumped forward 4 inches. I saw it go and she heard it. And we both looked up and we saw that the chair had moved forward 4 inches for no reason. Nothing else in the room had moved. It had just moved.
That's pretty freaky.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. So I got a question for you.
Please.
Have you ever heard of the term elevated horror?
No, what is that?
Oh my! I think this is your future, girl.
What? I'm okay. Writing it down.
Elevated horror. Yeah, and I'm even going to give you some fun homework.
Okay.
All right. You need to watch the Jordan Peele horror movie called Get Out.
I watch it. Love it.
You okay?
Love.
And It Follows. Have you ever seen It Follows?
No. What's that?
Okay, so those are two movies that are considered quote unquote elevated horror, and I think this could be where you're headed. And I'll tell you that sort of the general sense in the horror community is elevated horror is a more this is going to sound weird, but like a more sophisticated or literary style of horror.
Is it kind of like magical realism is to literary, like elevated horror is to horror?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's definitely, it bends way more towards the supernatural and the paranormal, not in an urban fantasy way. It's not like spells and wizards, right?
I'm not very interested in that. I'm interested in the other stuff.
Right. And it's also not, it can be sort of monsters, but it's not like, it's not slasher. It's not like serial killer jump scare. No, it's none of that. Bird Box by Josh Malerman, sort of elevated horror.
That looked too scary for me.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to spoil anything, but, there are certain things you don't see in Bird Box, and I think that's it too. Like, elevated horror is not necessarily like graphic either. So I like, and that, and it's really hot right now, and it's there's been a resurgence of horror in the past couple of years, especially with, you know, Stephen King's movie It's, you know, those two movies coming out, and horror is kind of, it's enjoying a resurgence right now, and elevated horror is, people are talking about that as being sort of more literary, more supernatural. That sounds like exactly what you want to do.
I'm so excited. I'm going to research it. I'm going to read some. Sorry about my dog. she's very excited about this idea. I think Mama might be coming home from the store. So I would love to know if people have read any of this, what they have loved. I would love that to be a question in there too. Thank you for that. That sounds really exciting. Do you think it's selling in self-pub arenas? I'm kind of looking for a vehicle for that.
I don't know. It's a good question. I know JD listens to the podcast, so maybe we can get him to chime in, because he's really,
please, JD.
Yeah. I mean, his new book that's coming out this month, it's not really elevated horror, but it's definitely more supernatural. It's more like Stranger Things kind of style. Like, Stranger Things is another, it's a bit retro, but like, that's, it's also not like super gory, and it's not like serial killer, you know? So yeah, I don't know.
That's
like,
awesome.
It definitely sounds like something you could write well.
And maybe I ask this question because I really am wandering that way, and always have been wandering that way.
Yeah.
Any other ghost stories I have to tell you? Just that my father-in-law, who is a retired Air Force Republican, like as down to earth as you can possibly get, he believes their house is haunted. He and mom and Lala's brother once saw the cat be lifted up into the air in the kitchen, suspended in midair for a while, and then flung against the cabinets. And the way Tony always tells it is, and the cat went that way and your brother went the other way. And Lala's where she has heard footsteps in that house, like when there shouldn't have been. But yeah, I want to hear two things. I want to hear from people if they know about elevated horror and what they think about it and what they like about it, because it's definitely a new term for me.
Yeah.
And two, what ghost stories do they have, and what do they have a hard time? Do they have a yen to integrate that, or is it just not something that touches their writing?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it could work its way into your writing, even if you're not writing supernatural stuff or horror.
My closest, I mean, even in a bunch of my women's fiction, there have been dreams that mean more than they should, or actually symbolize something. So it's always at the outskirts for me. And I want to bring it more front and center.
Could be your next book idea. I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I definitely need another genre. Let's make it six. Screw my also bots up even more. Well, thank you, my friend. That was super fun.
Yeah. That was a great question. Okay. I wasn't expecting that one from you.
You worked. I knew you worked. All right. And you guys can come over and talk to us at thewriterswell.org and leave us comments. We would love to hear from this one. I want these stories, because anybody who tells me anything, I will completely believe. There's no reason not to, right?
Right.
I will believe. There's a lot of stuff I don't know. I can't see ultraviolet. What else am I not seeing? All right, Jay. Happy writing to you. Don't get the coronavirus.
Yeah, same to you. Rest up. Get well.
I will.
Bye. Okay, bye.